It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 106 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:30, I'm spending a couple of segments talking football and stand-up with comedian Eric Griffin, who's headlining at the Comedy Mothership this weekend. And in mere seconds, Kevin Dunn joins me once again to take a look back at last night's first round of the NFL draft and what's ahead for Longhorn prospects, the Cowboys, Texans, and more tonight and tomorrow. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. It's now that I say hello to my best pal, Kevin Dunn, who is nice enough to join me for a second time this week. We really neglected to talk draft a couple of days ago, so what better way to make that up than to actually talk about the picks that have happened now through the first round? What's up, KD? How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. It's Friday, and I love the NFL draft. I mean, I'm one of those people that I've always liked it, but it's just gotten more intriguing to me. So this is like, maybe sadly to some people, but this is like a big sports weekend for me, and I know it is for a lot of other people. So I felt bad because we were just two old angry guys, you know, with our fists up in the air, screaming about hipsters and why 2024 sucks. So I'm like, you know what? I wanted to talk a little NFL draft. So
sometimes the clouds do need to be screamed at, though.
Yeah, well, they're definitely out there today. So I'm going to have my fist up on a Friday, just mad at the world. Hey, man, it's Friday. You're living the best time ever. Relax.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Longhorns first, because Byron Murphy goes in the dead center of the first round to the Seattle Seahawks, which continues to be Great Northwest Austin, I guess. And then the Chiefs move up to go with Xavier Worthy, a guy that they have been linked to quite frequently in mock drafts over the last several months now. Love the landing spot for both those guys. Seattle obviously has a new coach in charge, a defensive-minded guy with the Seahawks, and Byron Murphy does seem like one of those center pieces that you can build an entire defense around. And for Xavier Worthy, look, he's not exactly Tyreek Hill, but he has that level of explosiveness. And for a Chiefs team that really struggled to find reliable wide receivers last year, even while winning another Super Bowl, getting him as part of the equation now is only going to make Pat Mahomes that much better. And he's already a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, I love both fits. I think the most obvious fit is Xavier going to Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid. And we just know how they utilize guys like that. So that's going to be a fun toy for them. He's just got to stay on the field. And stay, you know, and be as durable as possible. And that's tough for a lot of people, but certainly at 163, 165, whatever he is. But love that fit. And I like the Murphy pick, too. As you mentioned, defensive-minded coach. We've seen Texas guys go up there. Granted, it was a little different in terms of the regime, but do very well. So he's a great example for every guy right now. Byron Murphy was not in any first or second round mock draft last year at this time, or really even in the summer. You really continue to develop and have that type of a year, eyeballs will be on you. So I'm just really proud of him. And, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of Texas guys go today too.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Byron Murphy is a guy who is so talented and obviously impressed enough in the scouting combine and the UT Pro Day that in a normal year, or a year that wasn't this crazy with quarterback prospects and just overall offensive talent, he very easily could have found himself in the top 10. You can say the same thing about a guy like a Dallas Turner too, but this is just a very offensive-minded year draft-wise, at least in the first round, for what, the first 14 teams who made selections.
It was just a really good, heavy year for three of the most valuable positions: quarterback, wide receiver, and offensive linemen, specifically offensive tackles that can protect that quarterback. So it was a heady year for that, and I think it just shows you the value. I mean, I will say the Penix one I've been calling for a long time. I figured that I just knew teams would trade up and that would change as we got closer to the draft, and it did. Bo Nix really surprises me. I think that's just a reach.
Yeah, you wonder if that's Sean Payton really starting to lose his grip on knowing what's good, but Bo Nix does have a little bit of that Drew Brees quality, the accuracy. I would argue that Brees was more accurate in those intermediate and deeper throws than Bo Nix is right now. And Sean Payton was singing the praises of Bo Nix's arm strength last night, which is not something that you really heard a whole lot out of Bo Nix. It's the accuracy, it's the ability to win, and a guy who really developed at that quarterback position, starting games as a true freshman at Auburn, who had a really hard time on the road, to a dude who had Oregon on the cusp of perhaps playing for a national championship in the semifinal, although they ultimately lose to Washington, obviously, in that Pac-12 championship game. Bo Nix was a shock, but at that point, Denver felt the need to go out and find somebody because they are so desperate to get an answer at quarterback, because Sean Payton, even if he is starting to lose it, he gets it. If you don't have a good quarterback, nothing else really matters in this league.
Yeah, they've got the 2019 Auburn quarterback room in there with Jared Stidham and now Bo Nix. There are three guys that at their previous school you would have said, no, they're not going to be a first-round pick. And if you look at what Daniels did at Arizona State, he flashed, but he wasn't super consistent. He totally turned into a different guy. And then Bo Nix and Michael Penix. So guys that really just got better and better and better. Nix to me was the biggest turnaround though. I mean, Daniels had talent and you get him with Neighbors and Thomas and Penix showed stuff too. I didn't know he was that accurate at Indiana, but Nix just blew me away. I mean, I give that kid a ton of credit. I mean, obviously getting away from the pressure of his dad playing there in Auburn was the best thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah, Penix had the arm talent in Indiana also. You know, he ends up getting hurt pretty much every season that he's there. But that 2020 year was a really good one for him before he went down, I want to say, games 6 of 7 into the year. But he had picked up some big wins along the way, too. And so he obviously goes to Washington and is able to stay healthy these last two seasons. People don't bring that up enough, even though he was banged up here and there. And I think he did miss a game or two the previous season and less so this last year, although he was playing injured at times. He's obviously a winner. And he won at Indiana, a place that is very difficult to win, and then did a whole lot more of that at Washington, a spot where you have had more successes historically over the last several decades now.
Yeah, no, you're right. But yeah, I was that was fun for me because you and I have been going back and forth on that. Although you agreed with me, but I wouldn't see him in any mock in the first round. I was like, man, his arm talent is too good, and people will gamble with that position, and that's what you saw last night. They will. It's worth the gamble. It's worth the risk if you do nail it. And you got a quarterback, you know, I mean, it's just a must have, obviously, in that league.
It's so interesting to me because I see people questioning Michael Penix's arm talent. Even our buddy Ian Boyd from Inside Texas, he and I were going back and forth on Twitter a little bit earlier, and I love disagreeable conversations. There was nothing hostile or no ill intent, and I don't hate Ian now because we didn't agree eye to eye on something. But Ian obviously sees football really well, but he said he questioned Michael Penix's passing ability at the NFL level. If anything, Michael Penix is the best passer to me in the draft this year, and I think he has exceptional pocket presence too, which is where that athleticism really shows up much more so than them designing run plays for him over the last couple of seasons, because they were trying to preserve his legs a little bit more than what was happening at Indiana. But people think that Penix, just in terms of the pure talent, isn't necessarily there for a first round pick, much less when you throw the injury risk in there too.
Yeah, I mean, I respect Ian a lot. Ian definitely knows ball, and he's a fun guy to, as you said, you can have debates with him and people can be adults about it. But yeah, I don't see that. I mean, I see more what you see. I see a really talented, thrower, and maybe at times he holds on too long in the pocket and does exactly take too many hits. But in terms of throwing the football and spinning it, it's hard for me to look at a lot of his games, but especially the semifinal game and tell you he can't throw the football.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation on the other side. I'm speaking with Kevin Dunn, my best friend and a guy who knows a ton of football as well. The reason why it may make the least sense for the Falcons is a guy that they just acquired and signed to a massive extension just in the last month or so. So we'll talk about that coming up, as well as where Longhorns might end up today, what the Cowboys did last night, what the Texans might do, and more here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for one more segment with Kevin Dunn, joined me to start the show, and that conversation now continues on the NFL draft. And Kevin, we were just talking about Michael Penix. It was a reach for Atlanta to take him at 8, but if they think the talent is there and if they think he's going to turn into an elite quarterback, that's the move that you have to make. Now, where it becomes most questionable for me is not Michael Penix's injury history, because I think the potential for him to get the year off and to put more focus into strength, conditioning and mobility training is going to help him long term. It's the fact that they just got Kirk Cousins and they signed him to this massive 3-year extension in the last month or two now. And obviously, Falcon fans are wondering about that. Kirk Cousins, according to insider reports, was a little bit confused with what they did with that first round pick too. But the best case scenario, I think, for the Falcons, if Penix does pan out, is that Kirk Cousins is your quarterback this year. He's good enough that he elicits a really nice trade in terms of draft capital coming back to you this next offseason. And Penix is ever able to take over maybe at the end of this year, or perhaps going into that 2025 season, and all of a sudden this pick, which is being questioned by pretty much everybody right now, starts to make a whole lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's baffling to some degree because you sign him for the 4-year deal, but you know, two of those are guaranteed. Kirk Cousins is not young. He's coming off the Achilles. I think it's insurance, but also maybe the only question is, well, if Penix starts in year 3 or 4, what will be 28? I like the gamble because I believe in Penix so much. And yeah, I think that's what they did. I wouldn't have done that for Bo Nix, but I definitely see why it's getting some criticism today. It's a gamble on their part. We'll see if it pays off, but it's definitely one of those moves that down the road probably could get you fired if it goes haywire.
Yeah, and the Vikings make a little bit less of a reach, I guess, than what people were predicting based on mock drafts that included trades. It had the Vikings giving up quite a bit to move into that 5 spot to take J.J. McCarthy. They only end up needing to move up 1 spot to do so, flipping with the New York Jets to get J.J. McCarthy. And I am still in that category of people, even understanding that he made plays when he needed to over these last couple of years and that he has won a lot of games at the college level, that there is a much greater risk with taking a J.J. McCarthy in the first round than there was Michael Penix just 2 picks earlier.
I agree with you. And look, I mean, J.J., we just don't know. In fairness to him, when he did have to make some really tight throws, especially this year, he made some NFL quality throws where there's not much of, you know, not much of a window, and he fit some balls in there. But we just didn't see him do it a lot. He's obviously a winner. But I'm with you. I think there's more of a gamble, assuming both guys stay healthy, on J.J. McCarthy. But they didn't have to give up very much. I thought Philadelphia did a really good job getting Quinyon Mitchell and just sitting there. There were some teams that just kind of sat and let this draft with the run on people they're not necessarily going after, a.k.a. quarterbacks, linemen, and receivers, and just sat back and were like, you know what? We didn't have to give up any capital. Sometimes we even traded down and still got our guy.
Yeah, is there anybody else who really comes to mind in that regard?
I mean, Mitchell I like a lot. I thought that was a really good pick. Philadelphia has first off, they desperately need that. But I thought they just kind of sat and it was smart. I'm trying to think of who else. Heck, you could say Kansas City. I like what the Cowboys did. I think the Cowboys are in that boat. I think Guyton was pretty much the guy they wanted all along. And, you know, they're able to trade back, get a little bit of capital. And I also like what the Texans did. This was months ago, but just saying, you know what, we're going to win this thing in the 2nd to 5th round, because that's how you really build the NFL team.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I think after Mims went at 18 to the Bengals, the Cowboys realized that they would still be able to get Guyton later in the first round or maybe even the 2nd round, and they ultimately end up taking him at 29, which was a good move for them. They've got to reload on that offensive line, and they need to work hard to try and fill the middle of that defense, although and shifting to where Longhorns might hear their names called tonight or over the course of the weekend, it seems almost certain at this point that we're going to hear Jonathan Brooks' name not just called, but the Cowboys selecting him likely with that second round pick.
Yeah, I could see that. I really hope Jonathan goes in the second round. The Cowboys would be a good fit for him. I think you're going to see probably Ladd McConkey and or A.D. Mitchell go right away. They were on the cusp of being first round picks. I wonder how much the A.D. Mitchell, that whole blood sugar thing, played into to him, you know, falling out of the first round. Not that he was a lock for the first round, but, you know, we probably saw his name more than we saw Xavier Worthy's.
That is so ridiculous, by the way, because you and I cover this program. We cover this program closely, and we talk to a lot of people around the program. I didn't hear a single thing about him being a malcontent this year, but because somebody tweets that out to go along with him being a diabetic who, when his blood sugar gets low, all of a sudden he's not as focused or he can be grumpy about things. People who aren't diabetics get hungry and angry. It was so absurd, and it's just I feel like AD got a little bit railroaded there. It's a damn shame, but somebody's about to get a steal in the top of the second round with him too.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with a lot of the players, and I never once heard that. So I don't know where that came from.
Oh, wide receiver's a little bit of a diva. There's a breaking piece of news for you.
Yeah, right, exactly. I don't know. You know, he'll get drafted. Not really sure where T-Sweat's going to go after his whole deal, but I still think he's probably at least a round three guy, and he could definitely go in the second round. I mean, those type of tackles aren't valued as much as say, guys like Byron Murphy, but there could be JT Sanders. Christian Jones is the one that I'm really curious if he sneaks into the third round.
That wouldn't surprise me at all, and I am going to be watching closely to see who gets drafted first between JT Sanders and Devondre Sweat, because I think an interesting, maybe a pessimistic conversation about these UT prospects and how things have gone for them since the season has ended is both JT Sanders and Devondre Sweat have seen their draft stock plummet for various reasons. Now, JT had more to do with the combine numbers and how he tested or didn't test at UT's pro day, but I think a little bit of that was there with Devondre Sweat to go along with the drag racing / DWI incident that popped up a few weeks ago. Disappointing for sure for both of those guys, but ultimately when it's said and done, I'd like to believe that both are still going to end up as third round picks at the absolute worst.
Yeah, and look, I mean, as long as teams aren't overly concerned that, you know, Devondre is going to be doing that again and that was, you know, I don't want to say kid being a kid because you should never do that, but young person making a mistake and that yeah. JT just wasn't in good shape, then, you know, talk about a pessimistic way to look at it. A lot of these teams look at it and they're like, start licking their chops and they go, whoa, 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 daddy's going to get some value later on, you know. As long as they've done their intel, and trust me, they do FBI level type background stuff. So they're going to have their own opinion and feel on if this is someone who is going to be a problem or someone who's just going to be a really good value pick. So I think both those guys could still be that. But yeah, JT did not help himself out just with pretty much all the testing. And then Devondre, a little bit of the testing, but obviously the I-35 thing, you know, really, really hurt him. So, but he'll get drafted. He'll be on a team. And at this point, you just, you know, for all these guys, I'm just looking for a good fit, which is why I felt like it was two good fits for Byron and Xavier last night.
All right, last thing now. What do you expect to see out of the Texans over the next couple of days?
Great call. I you know, they've got different spots that they still need to fill and hit. I think they're in a really good spot. I don't know exactly how many picks they got back, but I know they've got, you know, I mean, I truly believe you make your hay in the, you could even say third to fifth round, but you also second to fifth or second to sixth, that's how you really build good NFL teams. And that's where, if you watch a ton of college football, you can tell the teams that have really good scouting departments and the ones that don't. So they you know, heck, they can probably go best player available a couple times. And when you're in that spot, that's when you're in really good shape, because it's like, well, we need that, we need that, we need that. And this guy has been top of our board. We think he's a second round guy and we're getting him in the third. Well, hell, let's take him. So I think there are a couple different you know, ways they can go. Is there any position group or anyone in particular you're thinking of with them?
Not anyone in particular. I think that they are going to be looking to boost both the offensive and defensive lines. And because D'Amico Ryans is such a defensive-oriented guy, he's going to be looking to add talents on that side of the ball. The offense, I'm not going to say it's totally taken care of just yet, but they've done a great job of developing that side of the ball with last year's draft, with some offseason acquisitions, and things seem to be humming along. The offense, I guess, is a little bit further ahead than the defense is right now, but that's not to say the defense was bad necessarily, so I could see them putting a heavy focus on defense when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right about that, and I think the line is where they go. I mean, I see a projected pick of Edgerrin Cooper, the linebacker from A&M, which would be a hell of a pick.
Yeah, it would be.
42nd overall. I mean, I think maybe with that pick, they go best player available. But then after that, maybe try and fill some spots, whether it's on the line. I see Mason McCormick on a mock for them, who's a guy who played at South Dakota State, interior offensive lineman. So that would kind of get to your point of building the lines. And that would make sense with obviously the regime they have right now. But they're in a good spot. They're in a fun spot because they've got some picks. They can go best player available because they've got enough spots that they need to fill. And I mean, obviously best player available, not being a quarterback or something like that. But, I really like what they're building, man. You talk about a turnaround. It's funny, you get the right coach, the right GM, and the right quarterback in there. And boy, it really changes the feel of a place, doesn't it?
Sure does. He is Kevin Dunn. Follow him on Twitter at KevinDunn01. Thank you, as always, my friend. I'll talk to you off the air probably in the next couple of hours, but next week for sure on this radio show too.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to get into next week. Well, I don't know. We'll find something to talk about.
I'm sure we will. We can't even predict everything that we'll probably get into. Coming up, it is comedian Eric Griffin ahead of his headlining shows at the Comedy Mothership this weekend.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Eric Griffin is a longtime comedian, actor, and podcaster. As an actor, you know him and everything from I'm Dying Up Here to Murder Mystery to playing Montez in Workaholics. As a podcaster, he's got an excellent podcast that releases just about weekly called Riffin' with Griffin. And as a comedian, he's going to be here in Austin this weekend headlining at Joe Rogan's Comedy Mothership. You can go to his website, ericgriffin.com, to find out more. And that's Eric with a K. Eric, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I am good.
Cool. Hey, I heard you talking on a recent Riffin' with Griffin about how it's ridiculous to think that the NFL is that rigged. Do you have a team that you like? Like, would it be worth us talking about the draft tonight? Or are you just a general
fan? Whatever you want to talk about, you know, NBA draft, whatever it is.
Who is your NFL team?
I like the Raiders.
Okay.
You know, cause I'm from LA.
Okay.
I was born and raised in LA. I also like the Colts. I don't know why. I was just a big Peyton Manning fan. So okay. I really enjoyed the Colts, you know, but it's just like, they feel cursed to me.
Both franchises, as a matter of fact, at this point.
Yeah. But maybe this Antonio Pierce guy is going to be the thing that's going to be the difference. But man, it just feels like some franchises, man, they're never going to get over the hump. You know, I feel like that. You know, as you get older and like, you know, decades pass by and you realize, oh man, these teams I like, they never win. you know what I mean? So it's just like weird thing.
Well, the Raiders for the longest time, they were just beholden to Al Davis's insanity. It's like Cowboys fans now. I'm not a Cowboys fan. I'm surrounded by him here in Austin, though. It just amuses me each and every year to watch Jerry get older and older and more out of touch with reality.
He's the Joe Biden of the NFL. You know what I mean?
Seriously, you're waiting for him to start sniffing kids' hair before too long. And
yeah,
unfortunately crazy. For a lot of my friends, they realize that also. They're like, man, we're completely screwed until this guy dies. And until then, we may have a good roster, but there's no way we're making another Super Bowl run.
Yeah, they do feel cursed ever since what he did to Jimmy Johnson. I don't think the team has been the same since, you know?
Yeah, I think the idea of karma can be overrated at times, but if it does exist, that's a great example, right?
Yeah. But it's like, also, it's like, you know, just, it's like, this isn't about you. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, he makes it all about him. And I get it. I mean, it's like, but you know, it sucks though. Like, but the thing is, what's the guy supposed to do? They had 9 all pros last year. 9. So it's not like Jerry Jones is putting together a team and signing off on a roster that you go, well, this team doesn't have a chance. That team should go to the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Like, that team should go to the Super Bowl. They got like skill position every, like, they had a, they have a Hall of Fame person on the offensive line. They got, you know, Micah Parsons. They got 2 great corners. They got an all pro receiver. Dak Prescott played the best he's ever played in his whole career. They've got 12 win seasons in a row. It's like Jerry Jones is like, I did what I'm supposed to do. And at what point? At what point do you go, this has, it seems like it's a higher power involved in this. You know what I mean? At what point do you go like, well, what more do they have to do? And I think that, like, that's where he's at. So, in one hand, I do agree with you. It's like, Jerry Jones, get, like, what are you doing? Like, is he crazy? But on the other hand, I'm like, this guy knows how to put together a football team. Say what you will, but he knows how to put together a football team. They just can't get over the hump. And is that the curse of the Cowboys, or is it just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I think the roster construction is partially because he did hand off some of that responsibility to his son Steven and some other people within the organization. Now, he still has final say, so of course, but yeah, he is less emphatic in making those decisions. But you're right, this roster was good enough last year to make a run.
Been good enough 3 years in a row.
Yeah, that's
they
fair.
They won 12 games 3 years in a row. That's a Super Bowl winning roster, you know?
But the two commonalities and maybe the two most important aspects of a football team being good in the postseason are your head coach. Yes, Mike McCarthy does have a Super Bowl title, but he is routinely outcoached on the sidelines. And Dak, for as good as he was statistically last year, time and time again, has not gotten it done in the postseason. And look, his numbers.
Well, he's a fourth round. What is he, a fourth round pick? I mean, like, when's the last fourth round pick to win a Super Bowl? You know, like, this is a league full of, like, really fantastic quarterbacks now. And you either have to have one of those generational talents, one of those guys. If you don't have one of those guys, the team around you's got to be good. And even in that example, they haven't won the Super Bowl. Look, as good as San Francisco 49ers are with their roster, and that roster is stacked, they're not going to win because they got Brock Purdy. Yeah. That guy's, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's serviceable. He's fine. But, like, put Joe Burrow on the 49ers. You know what I'm saying? Like, put, what's his name from the Bills? Put that guy Josh on the Allen. Dallas Cowboys. Put Josh Allen on the Dallas Cowboys. Are you kidding me? So it's like, at a certain point, having the guy at quarterback is important. I think Dallas should cut ties with Dak Prescott, and I think they're going to. That's why they didn't sign him or re-sign him. They'll re-sign him if they go to, like, say, the NFC Championship. Let's say they have a great game in the NFC Championship and lose, or even if they get to the Super Bowl and lose, Dak will be back, and he'll be the highest-paid quarterback in the league. But if not, you know, if they go, look, we're getting the same thing from you. All right, so bye-bye. Thank you very much. You're gonna be in our Ring of Honor. And he'll move on, and he'll still make $40 million from another team. You know, there'll be a team out there that'll sign him for 3 years, like Kirk Cousins, and you know, while they're, like, trying to draft their next guy, and, like, you know, it'll just be like that.
Yeah, I guess Cousins was better than nothing for Atlanta. As somebody who watched a lot of Bears football last year, lived in Chicago for a little bit, but the honest answer is that I had Justin Fields on my fantasy team. Justin Fields is better than a lot of people realize. I think Justin Fields with that Falcons roster.
Oh, you're one of those guys, huh? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, man, 3 years in the league, right? He won 7 games in 3 years. Stop it.
It's not all on him. He had nothing around him the first couple of years. Last year he got DJ Moore, and they were starting to pick up some steam before he suffered a thumb injury. With 7 weapons around him, he is a good quarterback. Games. His offensive line was trash also, and the coaches on the sidelines. It doesn't matter what you're... They were actively trying to discourage him from using his legs at the start of last season. They finally
They don't want him to get hurt.
That's part of it, but you have to let a guy do what he's really good at. He can be a good thrower, but his maybe his most valuable...
That's won how many Super Bowls?
Who?
How many Super Bowls has an athletic running quarterback won in the history of the league?
So if you're talking about a run-first quarterback, the answer is zero. But a guy like Pat Mahomes has great athleticism and uses his legs.
Come on, man. That's one of the, that's arguably the greatest thrower of the ball ever. It's like him, Marino, and Aaron Rodgers for physically throwing the football. That guy's a unicorn. Take him out of all discussions.
I'm actually a fan of the guy who's slated to be your Raiders starting quarterback this upcoming season, Gardner Minshew. Now, I was acquaintances with his college coach, Mike Leach, back in the day before his unfortunate sudden passing. Minshew is a gunslinger, of course, as you saw with the Colts last year. But he's also a guy who gets the ball out quickly, and he has that moxie, too. He has that winner's moxie. So I think he is an upgrade over whoever the hell it was y'all were rolling out at quarterback last season, whether it was, what, Jimmy Garoppolo or the rookie. I think did Brian Hoyer start a game or two for you guys? It was an absolute wheel at quarterback for y'all last
mess.
Season.
Yeah. It was an absolute mess. But, you know, I think that the locker room likes the coach, and we'll see if they show up for a full season. I think they caught people by surprise in the end last year, but now moving forward, it's going to be a little different because teams are going to be ready for him now. Okay, the Raiders do this. It's tough. I mean, if you think about it, in the past 10 years, the same teams seem to be getting far in the playoffs. And it's like there's so many other teams that they never break through. So now we got teams like Detroit finally breaking through. But can they get over the hump? You know, and that's the thing. That's the hard part, is taking that step from being like mediocre team to like getting to the playoffs and advancing. That seems to be a road that people could do through the draft. They're really terrible. They build up all these draft picks and players, and things happen. Things fall their way, and then they get to that point. Now, what gets you over the hump? Go back to our original talk. It's a great quarterback. No matter what the system is and whatever's going on there, when you have that great quarterback, they cover up all those mistakes that people are making, or that can bring galvanize a team and bring them together. There's very few. Like, look what Joe Burrow did to Cincinnati. Look, they haven't won yet, but we're looking at them now like a franchise that can win. Yeah. And it's because of him. San Francisco 49ers is a great test case, because you look at them and go, wow, that team is phenomenal, but they have yet to win. Against a team this past year, the most drops in football. Not 1,000-yard receiver, I believe, was on Kansas City. Okay,
oh, they were terrible. Even Travis Kelce had a down year, too. You're absolutely right about that.
And so, but what kept that team together? So what would you rather have? Would you rather have the great quarterback with the mediocre play throughout the whole year, or would you rather have a stacked Dallas Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers team with like a so-so quarterback? We already know what the answer is. We know what the answer is. It's like, I'd rather have Joe Burrow in a terrible organization than have Dak Prescott.
Well, that clutch factor is infectious, especially when the most clutch guy is the quarterback. Because guess what happened with that receiving core for Kansas City once the playoffs started? They stopped dropping the football. I think they had like one drop in their three or four playoff games. They already had a really good defense that was up to the task. And even though Pat Mahomes didn't necessarily have his best game in the Super Bowl, he still found ways to make plays to win games, back to the point of using your legs. No, he's not a run-first quarterback, but they deployed his legs really wisely at times in huge situations, picking up first downs or getting huge chunks of yardage to ultimately win that game in overtime.
No, I totally agree.
He is comedian, actor, and podcaster Eric Griffin. Check out his work and connect with him on social media at his website, ericgriffin.com. That's Eric with a K. He's going to be here in Austin this weekend, headlining at Joe Rogan's Comedy Mothership. Coming up on the other side, we're going to get into the stand-up side of things with Eric Griffin right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
One more segment with comedian Eric Griffin. He is also an actor and a podcaster. As an actor, he's been in a lot of stuff over the years. Most notably, played Montez in Workaholics. Since then, He was in Murder Mystery, I'm Dying Up Here, a great Showtime series that was canceled, unfortunately, after a couple of seasons. I'm going to ask him about that here in a sec. And as a podcaster, you should check out his weekly podcast called Riffin' with Griffin. Sometimes there's guests, sometimes it's hysteric, talking about all sorts of different things. And you can connect with all of that by going to his website, ericgriffin.com. And that is Eric with a K. And again, headlining at Joe Rogan's Comedy Mothership this weekend. Unfortunately, tickets are sold out for all of his shows through Sunday. But still, check out his show there, comedymothership.com, for available tickets to future shows. And Eric, while we did spend all of last segment talking football, I did want to end with stand-up, because stand-up is a passion of mine. I love stand-up, and it's obviously a passion of yours, too. It's your primary job. Yes, I am jealous about that. You're going to be back in Austin this weekend for your second weekend of headlining at the Mothership. Mothership has gotten a ton of
best club in the country, man. I've been everywhere, and there's just nothing better than just the vibe, the feel, the green room, the sound system, the way you're treated. Nowhere else in the country is going to treat you the way Joe Rogan and the people, Adam Egan and them over there, how they treat you. It's great. I think sadly, I think the shows are already sold out. You know, if you're trying to get tickets,
they are.
You know, but that's what they do there. All the weekends sold out, but you know. I'll be back.
Yeah, you will be. And I'm bummed because I normally wait until about 2 weeks out just to make sure that it actually works on my schedule, because family means that you don't have that freedom. But at last, it didn't work out this time. Next time for sure, though.
If you really do want to come, you know, just hit me up. I mean, I can, you know, they have like, they block off some areas and stuff. So, you know.
Oh, I appreciate that. I may take you up on that.
Just hit me up and let me know what show you want to come to and I'll get you in.
Much appreciated. It'll probably be the late Saturday or Sunday show, but you and I can text about that.
Yeah. Just text me about it, because there's like a little balcony area. I could be like, and this is where my guests sit, you know?
Hey, so a cool offshoot of you as a comic is that you're about to direct Matt Rife's upcoming, his new crowd work special, and you're going to performing with Matt at Netflix as a Joke in the Los Angeles area coming up here pretty soon. How did you and Matt initially connect?
Oh, man, he was like 14, 15, and he just was like, he was very persistent. He would send messages on Twitter. You know, he would just be like, hey, I'm a comic, boom, boom, and he just like nonstop, right? To the point where you're just like, who is this kid, you know? And then we just started connected, and then I said to him, I was like, look, I'm going to be in Pittsburgh. He said to me, he was like, oh, I see you're in Pittsburgh. And I was like, well, if you want to come do some guest sets, and he did. He got on a bus, a Greyhound bus, and rode a bus from Cleveland or wherever he was, and he bombed horribly. It was hilarious. And then we just bonded ever since, you know. When he came to LA for the first time, when he knew he wanted to move to LA, he stayed with me for a month, you know. It's like we've been like that, you know. It's like I feel like I learned fatherhood by being in his life, you know.
Interesting.
Just things like that, you know. It's like people don't even realize we were very close, you know. Like up to a year and a half ago, he was on my phone plan. You know what I mean? Like that's our relationship, you know? So now I'm like, wait, am I going to get on your phone plan now? You know? So it's like, you know, so it's great to see him do what he's doing. And I like being a part of it.
Like Matt's so interesting, because in comedic circles, he's very polarizing, because a lot of people feel like he skipped the line. But as you just said, it's not like.
He's been doing this for 12 years.
Exactly. He's been doing it for a while, but that still rankles some people, because he's found success sooner than they have. And they've been grinding it out for 20 plus years.
It is what it is. I tell him, who cares? He just bought his forever home. You know, he is starting where people want to end, you know. So it's like, it's totally fine. Like, it's, you're always going to have haters. This is a tough business, and there's no right or wrong way to do this. Like, it's like, embrace what it is. The internet is what it is. I mean, I could be a person that could be like, what the hell, I've been busting my ass for 20 years and I don't have success like that. I have my own success, and it's just like, that's just how it is, you know.
Exactly.
He's a charming guy. His comedy is very charming. It's very much like disarming the way he like does crowd work with people. It's not the usual like, hey, what do you do, blah blah blah. He's got a very special way he does it. He's been working hard, and people gravitate towards it. Listen, you can't You can't, you don't know what people want to hear and who they want to hear it from. That's the people decide that. We don't get to decide that. We don't get to say, well, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and then the people are going to come. That's not how it works. The people let you know that they want to hear from you. And if they don't, sorry, it didn't work out the way you want it. It's just, that just is what it is.
I am in that handful of people who loved I'm Dying Up Here several years ago. And
man, we needed one more season.
I know it was the perfect cliffhanger also, by the way, but Showtime had to do what they had to do, I guess. I feel like Eric, because we are in a golden era of stand-up now that's been going on for the last couple of years. If that show had fired up just a couple years later, it would probably still be going on right now. Do you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. If they would have found their way. But listen, man, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that I can't talk about that. Like, but the only thing I'll say is this: shows on a network like Showtime need two things to survive. And they need one of these two things to be great: viewership and critical acclaim. If you have critical acclaim, then I don't know why those balloons came. That was weird.
That was a perfect timing, by the way.
Yeah. It's weird. If you get critical acclaim, then, they'll be like, oh, okay, people are watching this and they can sell it a certain way. Or if there's like a viewership, there's a people really love this show and they're watching it. We were tepid on both. So it is what it is, you know? So it's like, as much as people really loved the show, they say, it wasn't enough people that loved the show. It wasn't enough people that, like, you know, understood even what the show was. I mean, I think that was what the issue was from the very beginning. I think Showtime got into business with Jim Carrey thinking they were going to get comedies, and they got something completely different. And I don't think it's what they wanted.
Which isn't surprising, because Jim Carrey also has the ability to get serious too. And if you,
I know it's, and that's what, you know, but I don't even know if even he wanted the show the way it was, because there's this thing called the upfronts, you know, and it's like, you know, new shows come out or the new season of a show comes out and there's like a big press junket, you know, we're there. And even up to that point, they're discussing whether it was a comedy or a drama.
Yeah.
Like the executive there was like, well, we still haven't decided, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what? And I remember saying, well, if we're going to get an award, who would get the award and what would it be? And it would probably have been Melissa Leo. And I was like, is she going to get best comedy actress? You know, I don't think so. It would have been, you know, so then it's like, you know, here's this drama. So, and it, you know, it was tough. You know, it was like, it was tough for it to end the way it did. And, you know, but, you know. It is one of those things. I feel like it would have been like, on still on the air, like Shy on, yeah. Nobody watches that show. Like, I don't know one person that watches that show. Not one person. It's still on the air. We came out at the same time. It's just one of those things. It got a lot of critical acclaim. It got, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It baffles my mind when I look at, like, so I know that there's more things to it than just what I'm saying is what I'm telling you.
I'd like to put that show in a garbage disposal. So I'm Dying Up Here could still be around, but alas, here we are.
Yeah, here we are. So we'll see, you know, well, you know, and we still got reruns of Workaholics. So you can always watch that too.
No doubt. That's a great show too. All right. Last question now, Eric, I love stand up. You love stand up. What do you love about stand up?
I love that. Here is a group of strangers, like there's, you know, 300 seats at the mothership, I believe it is, right? You know, mm-hmm. 300, 275, 300, right? So here's like 300 people who, for the most part, don't know each other. For the most part, have different religious beliefs, economical beliefs, economical standings, different, like, you know, this men, this women, there's old, different ages. And they're all together and they're sitting and they're collectively agreeing with me. With their laughter, or disagreeing with me with their laughter. That's magic.
Yes, it is. He is Eric Griffin. Check out his work at ericgriffin.com. You can also connect with him on social media there. And you can hear his excellent podcast, Riffin' with Griffin. Sometimes there are guests. You had a former employer of mine, Phil Hendry, on a few weeks back.
Phil, what a great guy.
Dude,
yeah,
great dude and one of the most brilliant radio minds of all time. I mean, that guy, the way he is able to channel his potential split personality disorder is second to none. Yeah. But that podcast is great. And if you have a chance, not here in Austin this weekend, but do check him out somewhere live at a city near you. Eric, this is a real pleasure. Thanks for joining me once again,
man.
Safe travels to and from Austin.
All right, I'll talk to you soon, man. Hit me up about the show.
All right, that is it for another week's worth of Sports Day Plus. Thank you to all of my guests this week, specific to today, Eric Griffin, who you just heard, and then also Kevin Dunn joined me at the start of today's show to break down the first round of the NFL draft. Kevin will be back next week to discuss the rest of the draft, which it's going here in just a couple of minutes, so second and third rounds, with rounds 4 through 7 taking place over the weekend. You have yourselves a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday at 6. In the meantime, hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.